Now, of course, your grandfather, Arthur, set up the business as well.
Well, he didn't set it up, actually. It was he played against the 1905 All Blacks, and he actually played against them twice. He played for the Eastern Counties as well against them, because you find it difficult to get players during the week. They had to work, and it was an amateur game. So he got invited up to play for the Eastern Counties up at Bedford. And so he played against them twice, and he obviously struck up a friendship with the winger, Duncan McGregor, who on his return to New Zealand changed coats and became professional, played rugby league. And he came back here in 1908 with the All Golds, and he stayed over here, and he set up the sports shop as we know it now, with my grandfather as a sleeping partner. It was called Hudson McGregor Sports then. Duncan McGregor played rugby league for Merthyr Tydfil, because rugby league was quite strong in Wales in those days. Don't really know what happened after that, but I think it's about 1913 or 14, he decided to leave England and go back, and left my grandfather, whether it was a struggling business, I don't know, in those days. But my grandfather's sister ran it until 1920. My grandfather left his job in the railway and took it on. And I've got a barometer at home which was presented to him in 1920 on leaving the Midland Railway. And while he was there with me, as I said earlier, he played cricket, football for them. I also have some cards with the Midland Railway Reading Club, which he was a secretary of that, I think. And he was also had a lot to do with athletics. And I have got some newspaper cuttings of him winning races for athletics and details of small prize money. But the biggest thing that came out of that was the fact that he was presented with a silver chalice for running, which was valued at more than you were allowed to receive as an amateur in prize money. And his amateur status was in question. I'm not sure what year that was, but I've still got the silver chalice.
Clearly it was resolved satisfactorily.
Yes, right? I presume it was, yes. Because in those days, if you any slight possession, you were thrown out. You weren't allowed to go near a rugby union club afterwards. As in more recent people like David Watkins, when he went to, he wasn't allowed near the Newport Club for years. But I think now he's chairman, isn't he?
The world has changed again.
Yes.
Well, certainly your grandfather was somebody who clearly got involved. I mean, yes, you've just been saying. And he certainly did with the rugby club, secretary and fixture secretary and treasurer at various times, some of the time at the same time.
Yes, that's right.
Did he talk to you about the administration of the club?
Not really. Again, he probably did, but as I say, as a youngster, I probably didn't listen. But my grandfather's on again, you know. But yes, it took up a big chunk of his life, and obviously with the shop in town, it was ideally suited to him. He combined that, and as I said, I think he was secretary of the athletic club for a long, long time as well. I don't know exactly how long, but
I think he was involved with tennis as well, wasn't he?
Yes, he lived in the Chestnuts in a corner of Escort Road and Chucksby Road. I think he bought that in about 1919, and it came with quite a lot of land, which he turned into tennis courts. He was obviously liked his tennis, and between there and Escort Close, I think it was, there was about 20 tennis courts, but they were compulsory purchased in the 1930s for the Ring Road. And from that, the beauty of that house, the Chestnuts, it had a big concrete hard standing at the front with a big blank wall, and you could play tennis against it to your heart's content. And it was probably that reason that my auntie, who sadly passed away last year, she would give you a lot more history. She actually became a very good tennis player and qualified for Wimbledon on 7 occasions. But apparently, she tells me, or told me, that my father was a very good tennis player. left-handed, but he concentrated on his rugby. But yeah, my grandfather ran. He really gave up the tennis courts during the war when they couldn't get labour to maintain them.
Now, during the Second World War, he clearly kept a close eye on the rugby club here.
Yes.
You know, which was taken over by the civil authorities, and of course, club games ceased for about 3 or 4 years.
Yes.
They played wartime internationals here. Did he ever talk about the wartime internationals?
No, again, not really. I used to talk to my dad about that, and obviously the players he played against, which were some really household names for the time, because rugby league and rugby union players played in services games, which I think they still can now. Well, it doesn't matter anymore, I suppose, but even in the amateur days, you would get rugby league and rugby union players together until the 70s, I think, because that's the way the services operated. So there were big occasions, those wartime internationals, and I think all the proceeds went to the services charities.
That's right.
You see the photographs, and the ground was absolutely packed out. Yeah. People on the roofs and everything.
Now, I think your father Gordon played in one of those.
He played either one or two, definitely at King's Home, but he played in
three, I think,
or three, maybe three.
And of course, he was selected for the for a fourth, wasn't he?
Yes. Yeah. That's right. I think he dislocated his thumb because he had a big scar on there. I'll remember. Yeah. But he played in. He played several against. They had a reciprocal thing with, as they did with Wales, they played against Scotland as well. And although, say, my grandfather scored 4 tries in international, my father did. But it was a wartime international, unfortunately, so it doesn't go down in the records. They talk about those games with great affection, because I think they were played even more in the spirit of rugby, where they were played to help the people who were fighting for our country.
Yeah. Yes, they had that good purpose, and I'm sure they were very much appreciated by the spectators as, you know, a relief to their normal life at that time.
Yes, they didn't have much to cheer about or to go and watch in those days.
Yeah. At the end of the war, I've read in the club minutes that the club was so grateful to your grandfather, Arthur, for having looked after the ground and negotiated with the local authorities, that they wanted to give him an honorarium, which he declined to accept, but asked for the money to be put into a memorial fund, which was the start of the fund which ended up buying the memorial ground. Do you know anything of that story?
Yes, I do, because obviously from all my playing career I played for Old Cryptons, who played on the memorial ground, so it's quite close to my heart. I think it was Doc Oldcock and Mervyn Hughes were the trustees, I think it was Mervyn, but they not only did they get the money from that, but they went round all rugby clubs in England and Wales raising money for this as well. And he did tell me that they bought the land, they levelled it off, seeded it, everything, spent a lot of money on it, and then just after they seeded it, there was torrential downpours and all the seed was washed away, so it had to be re-sown. So it was a difficult time for them, but a great legacy.
Yeah.
And it's just good to see that the pitches are being used for rugby all the time now.
Yeah. Well, for several seasons, Gloucester said that all the money from the sale of programmes here at King's Home should go into that fund,
right? That's right, it was always, and any combination games that were played down here, I don't think it was an admission, but I always remember standing on the gate with a wooden box with Memorial Ground Fund on for admission to any combination finals or anything like that in those days, which used to attract quite big crowds. The memorial ground's still there.